Good evening. This is KGVM, 95.9 on your dial, or you can stream us at kgvm.org. KGVM is a public broadcasting service of Bozeman, Montana, and this is the Men's Network Radio Show, weekly 7 to 8 p.m. every Thursday. Or you can stream this show and previous shows at kgvm.org. The Men's Network Radio is a resource for men on the path of self-discovery and self-awareness. And also there's an archive. If you go to kgvm.org, you can go into the archive. You just scroll down a little bit, and you'll see all the programs written in blue. Men's Network Radio is right at the top. Click on that, and you'll have an archive of the first 8 or 9, 10 shows. That's how many shows we've done so far this year. It's a new year coming on, January here. January 1st, this is a live recording on New Year's Eve. There's two shows, a real good interview with Mike Schultz, and he's an older fellow, 70 years old. It was his birthday when we did that interview. That's coming up. You'll be hearing that next Thursday, or this coming Thursday, I should say. And then I did a repeat of the original first show. I thought that was a pretty good interview, and I had some example of possible future shows. And tonight I want to do something different. I'm going to be heading for Hawaii here for a month, hopefully get a couple shows live out there. I've got a guy that will be a real interesting interview, Tom Cotton. And ex-surfer, older guy. He's gone through addiction, and he's an author, and possibly going to have a movie about his life, I guess. So we'll see how that goes. Hopefully I can record that out there in Hawaii. Tonight, to kick off the new year, I thought we'd start with a show of some resources. I'm calling it Jimmy's Library. I'm James Kosick, your host, and I've got all sorts of books that I've gone through over the years and some that I really like. And in the first several shows, if you've listened to them quite often on the show, I've always referred to that subconscious mind, the conscious mind, and reprogramming the mind. And I think a lot of what we'll be discussing tonight, I'm going to do some readings from some of these books and maybe have a little discussion, just my read on it anyway, my interpretation. And hopefully it's entertaining, and hopefully you get something out of it. I know I have in all these different books. This is what I call the self-help aspect of me being in growth, growing my personality, my individualism, and myself being a man, a new man, what they call the new man these days. So you're going to hear some rustling of pages. I'll do some readings. Maybe give my 2 cents on whatever I read. And we'll take it from there, see how the show goes. And hopefully it's one that'll capture your creative mind and also be an inspiration to make some changes, pick up some books. In the future, I'd like to do some YouTubes and podcasts. I get a lot of information from pretty cool podcasts for men out there in the world. So let's see how this goes. First book I'm looking at here is called Conscious Language, The Logos of Now. This is by Robert Tennyson Stevens. And my wife and I actually went and did a little workshop that was presented by a couple gals where we live here in the valley. And it was pretty good. It gets a little complicated, but it really makes you aware of what you say not only to others, but yourself. And he does get in a little bit here to the conscious and subconscious mind. So I'm going to just read a little excerpt here. and I thought it's pretty profound for the start of the book. It's called Speech. Speech is the conscious direction of breath from our lungs turned into sound currents crossing over our vocal cords. Those sound currents, shaped by our tongue, mouth, and lips, become words which have power to give life or take life. All language is vibration. Vibration includes sound and light. Language is the process of spirit. Breath inspiration becoming reality. So I found that pretty profound because how we talk, what we say, who we say it to has a big bearing on the energy, I call it the force field or energy field, in our surroundings, who we're with, where we're at, and even to ourselves, even if we're just laying in bed sometimes. I know I talk to myself a lot and have in the past, and I see some ways where I really put myself down, beat myself up. I was always good at that. I'm way better today not doing that, still do it sometimes, but you know, I recognize it now, and I see what it does to me personally and how it affects what happens around me. Just as a great example is four guys, a foursome on the golf course, and one guy loses it and starts throwing clubs and cussing through the whole 18 holes. It ruins it for everybody else. You know, oh, I'm lousy today. Oh, I'm doing this. I'm doing that. You know, I stink, you know. Boy, it just really brings down the energy. So I think that's a real good thing to really pay attention to, especially in our relationships, not only with our wives or girlfriends, but with others and with ourselves. Okay, let's see here. What else I got in here? Well, this is pretty good here. So, again, this is the Conscious Language book of Robert Tennyson Stephens. And he talks about possible components of the mind. And he gets into, he's got a quote here, language is the medium of our thought. Thought is the medium of our reality. Changing our language medium can change our thought, which potentially changes our reality. And that's so true. You know, what we tell ourselves. Are you going to be a positive man or are you going to be negative? And if you're negative, watch out, because it's whatever you tell yourself is going to come to fruition. So, so he has some possible components here of the mind, the subconscious mind. And the subconscious mind, that's where we hold all our stuff, all our old stories, all of that. In fact, it's really interesting. I'm reading a novel right now. It's a fiction, and it's about a woman writer, Australian, and she's aged now. She's up there in her age, and she's receiving, I guess it's her final big award for literature. And in that book, I came across a real interesting quote. I don't have the book with me. It's in the other room. But she talks about the past. And the past, she says, it's all about, she had to give a talk on a cruise ship about the future of novels. And she says, there is no future. She says, the past is all the history and the stories and how we recreate the stories and change them and how they affect our lives and bring us towards the present moment. And there is no future because we haven't gotten past the present moment yet. The future might be ideas or thoughts that we want to head to or goals or whatever. But it's all about being in that present moment that really is where life is at. And I have to agree with that. Anyway, I thought that was fascinating. It's a fascinating novel. J.E. Coetzee. I think he's a South African writer. I read a couple of his other books. He's a real good writer. Anyway, here it is, The Subconscious Mind by Robert Tennyson Stephens. Is power without direction? That's a heavy thought. You know, that is all our power. We don't have any direction. We're not controlling it. We're letting it take control of us. receives direction from the conscious mind, anyone's conscious mind. So we're saying, yeah, it's okay to be negative, you know. It's okay to, you know, man, I'm so depressed, you know, I'm feeling down and out. And that's what we're telling ourselves from our conscious mind. Plays back what it receives like a computer. So true. Is literal. And that's what, this is like what I was saying, you know, is that subconscious mind is very literal, because it's how we run our lives if we're not careful. We don't reprogram it. Response to repetition. It's a recurring event all the time. If you're negative, you know, do you have a strategy to change that negative thought? Response to feeling attracts experiences to us according to our beliefs. Is always operating and functioning. It's just amazing how much we live our life based on what our subconscious mind is telling us and directing us. And it's so true. I mean, there's so many times that if I get in a little spat with the wife or whatever, or with my boss at work or whatever, and it's amazing how when I recall that, it's like, oh God, this is like the 100th time, you know, that I've done that again and again and again. So it's like, when do I change that? When do I change my behavior so that I'm not reacting? The conscious mind, this is possible components of the mind. The conscious mind has the power of choice. The conscious mind has free will to direct or be directed. The conscious mind can create unconsciousness. The conscious mind can suppress into or express from the subconscious at will. And there it is. Our conscious mind has the power. We can reprogram it. We can change negative to positive at the snap of a finger if we take control with our conscious thought. The superconscious mind gives us 100% of the information in the conscious and subconscious mind, which is our reality. And the superconscious mind, we're going to talk about it later. I've got a couple of books by a Dr. Joe Dispenza, and he's really into that right now. He's a doctor. He's worked with people and with cancer and whatnot, and healing people by having them change what's going through their mind. And he talks about the superconscious mind. And so I'm on this program that I picked up called the Daily Ohm. And it's pretty cool. If you just check it out on your computer, the Daily Ohm. And they have different little courses that you can take. And you got a choice of what to pay, sliding scale, 15, 35, or 50 bucks. And but you get, every day you get a new feed, you know, and it's all, you know, of course they want you to sign up for a course. But this one came through and they gave a course overview, which is really good. And it's all about speaking with purpose. And this is good because I want to go through this with you right now. What does it mean to speak with purpose and not impulse? And it all ties in with this conscious language book that we just briefly dipped into. So I want to go through, I don't know if we'll go through all the questions, but I want to go through some of them. And and this is it. It says, the first question is just what I read. What does it mean to speak with purpose, not impulse? Speaking with purpose, not impulse, means entering deeply into the root causes and motivations that cause us to wield our words in impulsive, hurtful, and destructive ways. It is the practice of bringing kinder and more conscious attention not only to the ways in which we interact with others, but to ourselves. And this is just what we've been talking about. So many of us do our best to speak meaningfully to others, but we fail to show this kindness and intentionally to ourselves. Instead, speaking critical and reactive words. And it's so true, you know, we get out there instead of supporting somebody and giving them a boost, you know, we might be critical of what they're doing. And it takes away from, to me, it takes, for me personally, when somebody does that to me, it takes away from my experience of the moment. Does that make sense to you? Speaking with purpose means diving into our beings, locating the harsh words that reside there, and approaching them with a spirit of curiosity and compassion. It is about speaking with a desire to bring meaning to our speech and serve others with our words. And this is so much of what Robert Tennyson Stevens says in the Conscious Language book, because he gets into this a lot on our choice of words. In fact, he's got a whole list of different words that remain positive. And so when we interact with people, we have mindful thoughts going through our stuff. We're very mindful of what we say and how we say it. So it's a matter of us slowing down. I mean, one of the problems we see with the internet and tweeting and all that is that it's asking for instant response. And so these tweets and everything they get, that's an instant response. And half the time you don't know, you're not even thinking of what you're saying. You're just reacting to the responding to somebody else's tweet. And all of a sudden, with so much going on, we incorporate that into our life. Everything's an instant tweet that comes out of our mouth without thinking, without being mindful of it. Oh, here, that's the next question. Why do we so often speak from impulse instead of purpose? That's exactly what this person talks about. We live in the social media area, the value of speed, competition, and instant gratification. In the context of these cultural values, we require real intentionality to become human beings who speak meaningful words. And so this course that this person's offering on the Daily Ohm talks about he offers practices that help us develop the consciousness around our words. And he also talks about how our personal witness to the behaviors around words in our childhood environments has the power to shape how we speak to ourselves and others throughout our lives. And think about that for a second, you know. How were you raised? Who raised you? Who did you hang out with? Who are you still hanging out with? You know, if you ever took any positive thinking courses that were popular way back when, 20, 30 years ago, and probably still today, one of the things it always says, if you want to succeed in life, you want to hang out with those people that are successful. They have different attitudes and they talk differently than if you're stuck with the same crowd you always were stuck with, you know, the bar crowd or whatever. And that's basically how we speak to ourselves, you know, who we've hung out with all these years. I mean, I did a lot of construction in my life, and you know, if anybody's done construction out there, you know what that could be like. Or if in the military, you know, it's a whole different ball game. Without getting political, people always complain how vulgar Trump might be or the way he talks. But don't forget, he's a developer. He was in the construction industry all his life, and I mean, he's very tame compared to some of the background and some of the verbiage I had to contend with. And while I changed my conscious language, and I'm still changing it today. So let's see what else he's got to say here. Well, here you go. This is just reiterating what that last book, Conscious Language, talks about. Why is it important to speak with purpose? It's important to speak with purpose because words have power. So I don't know if anybody's ever read the author and the poet Maya Angelou. And she said, words are things. If words are indeed things, then they are things that can be used for better or worse. This is what we've been talking about, mindful language. Words can be used as weapons, or they can be used as bombs. Words can harm or heal. It is our choice how we use them. Words do not control us. We are in the driver's seat. It may seem easy to dismiss the profound power of words with tired phrases like, sticks and stones may hurt my bones, but words will never hurt me. But words do hurt. This phrase came from a time when, as a society, we shunned vulnerability. In many ways, we still do this. However, we are also collectively coming to consciousness about the need for vulnerability and healing, as well as the enormous role verbal abuse plays in causing childhood trauma, as well as trauma in relationship. Words have the power to affirm us, to turn us toward love, compassion, and creativity. It's so beautiful when you think about it, how we can really enhance each other's lives with the way we talk to each other and act with each other and slow down enough to think about the other person and be compassionate versus being a bully or being aggressive. And how do we begin to speak with purpose? The first step towards speaking with purpose is to start developing consciousness around our language and listening. It is very easy to move through life without ever pausing to notice the quality of our words and thoughts, especially when our egos hold on to fixed ideas of who we are. So that's pretty interesting. I was just kind of looking at, see if I wanted to read more on that, but I think it says it all right there. You know, we can control how we talk, what words we use. So powerful. You know, I've got another book here, going to Jimmy's Bookshelf, and I love this book. This book is called Emotional Clearing by John Ruskin. And let's see, John Ruskin is he's the founder of Integrative Processing Therapy. And it's pretty cool because it's an East-West guide to releasing negative feelings and awakening unconditional happiness. A lot of what he gets into in this book is addiction. I mean, addiction isn't just addicted to drugs or whatever. I mean, it's a lot of things. We're addicted to the language, how we talk. We're addicted to how we've been acting all our lives. And it's just a beautiful book. He gets into healing, how he healed people, and he gets kind of Buddhic with it. So he starts out with your typical psychotherapy type stuff, and then he gets into the Eastern philosophy or the Buddhic or yogic philosophy later on in a chapter whenever he's talking about it. And he's got some really interesting points too. You know, as men, I know I'm in a men's group, and a lot of this program is all about men networking, men's groups. And, you know, I know we all go to our group and we do our thing. And then at the end, you know, we're like, okay, I'm going to do this. This is my stretch or whatever for the week. And this is what I'm going to work on. And this chapter at the end, it's really nice because he gets into something about observing your tolerant point. And what he talks about here is, even though a healing crisis can provide integration, you should also be aware of your own personal tolerant point. And I know there's a lot of times when I feel like I had enough, you know, especially when you're doing any kind of therapy or you're really working on yourself real hard. And then it's just time to just like, okay, I need a break. I'm going to chill, veg out. It's just like dealing with stress, you know, stress on a job or whatever. It's the same thing, you know, we're trying to deal with our emotions and stuff and change our lives and be a better person. And at a certain point, you know, it's like, man, okay, I'm done. I want to relax, you know, whatever it is. I mean, give me a beer or whatever, you know, I just want to relax. And that it's good to notice that. You know, as you drop self-rejecting habits, you know, changing the subconscious mind, you open up to the possibility of real growth. But growth does not come without certain stress, just what I'm talking about. This is what's beautiful. When you look inside, you're likely to become aware of chaos, fear, anger, sexual frustration, loneliness, all of which have been suppressed, are now coming to the surface for integration. You may even think you are getting worse instead of better. This is common on the path to healing and growth. You are not getting worse, but you are just noticing that what has been hiding in the subconscious. You cannot return to the blissful state of ignorance about yourself. You must go forward through the negativity that is surfacing. So that's pretty heavy, you know. So it's real easy to just give up. But if you're aware of the syndrome, you know, and you're aware of your tolerant point, then it'll help you avoid of giving up, and you can sense when you are approaching your tolerant point and not exceed it. And that's so powerful there, that whole thought. I just love it. I know it's helped me. You know, I can tell, like if my wife and I are, we do certain things, or if we're processing something with each other or going through our relationship, and it might get to a certain point where I say, okay, that's enough. You know, I need to process what we've gone through, and we come back to it later. And it's pretty cool, you know, to recognize that. It's helped me out. I know that much. You know, and it's made my wife aware because, you know, we're all different. And she now recognizes when I can get to that boiling point. And if we go beyond what I can tolerate, then I just blow up, you know. So it's really nice for couples to recognize that in each other. And I'm having so much fun. Jeez Louise, we might end up with a two-part series here. That'd be great. Oh, so I just turned a page here and I got into where he talks about dependency and dependent love and whatnot. And anyway, in fact, we had a relationship show, a two-part series just recently around Christmas with another couple and beautiful couple. And they just got married. My wife and I've been married over 40 years. So we had a really nice connection and on how we operate as couples. And we talked a bit about codependency. And if I remember right, I think Mary had shed some light on codependency in a different way to look at it. Anyway, if you want, go to kgvm.org. Scroll down to the programs on your right-hand side and click on Men's Network Radio, and that should be archived. I know the first show is archived. I'm guessing by now the second show is already archived, so you can catch that, Relationships, Men and Women Relationships. And that's a really nice two-part series we did. The second part was really powerful. First part was good. I thought the second part was really good, too. In fact, I got schooled a little on that one if you want to check it out. It was really good. Let me read you this real quick and see where it goes. Dependent love is difficult to get past if one is not aware of what it is and how it is perpetuated. Even in non-romantic relationships, when we think we are acting out of brotherly love or even being spiritual, often a good deal of dependency is present in our motivation. That's pretty powerful. Think about how we use our language and what's motivating us to go in a certain direction. Are we manipulating somebody to get what we need? Are we tuning in to the other person and giving compassion or empathy? Or is it all about us? That's something to think about. He says here, if in fact you're able to modify your concept of relationship and exercise more discretion about how you get involved, you'll be ahead of the game. However, for most of us, avoiding dependent relationships will be difficult, if not impossible. We simply are not strong enough yet. We are inherently addictive. So, you know, I think what he's talking about here a lot is that we do depend on, whether we might depend on our group of friends, you know, I got to be with them, you know, that's where I get my juice, you know, my energy from. We might be dependent on a spiritual practice. We might depend on a lover, on a girlfriend, a wife, to give us our juice, give us our energy, you know, almost like a vampire. You know, I need this to do to get my energy, and because we've lived an addictive lifestyle for a long time. However long you've been on this planet, you know, you were addicted to your mother's breast, right? When you came out, you wanted to suck on something, you know. So think about that for a second. We can use dependency as an instrument for spiritual evolution instead of being abused by it. That's interesting. To do this, we must approach dependency with an enlightened sense of acceptance. Brother, I'm not quite sure how to interpret that, to tell you the truth. I'm a little stuck there. Dependency as an instrument of spiritual evolution instead of being abused by it. That's pretty interesting. I mean, I know a lot of people that got into different spiritual groups or religions or whatnot, or people call them cults, but I don't do that, because if you're a Cub fan, you're in a cult, you know, in my book. But at any rate, I've seen a lot of people that have had to readjust their lives because they became dependent on the spiritual aspect or religion. So I'm not quite sure, instead of being abused by it, I'm not sure what he means by that. We accept dependency whether it has to do with love or any other center of consciousness. We try to do as best we can, but then we must accept that we are compulsive, attached, and dependent. What we do not accept is our reactiveness to the dependency. When our partner is not behaving as we would like, and we feel pain due to the absence or threat of these behaviors on which we are dependent, we do not act out the pain and become confrontational, demanding, blaming, abusive, or vindictive. We process the pain. This is the fastest way to growth in relationship and overcoming of dependency. So that's pretty interesting, because my wife and I, we do this, and I'll talk a bit about it if we get a chance near the end, about nonviolent communication, NVC. So we do these check-ins. In fact, we talked a little bit about it in that previous program, Men and Women Relationships. And what I like about the NVC, Nonviolent Communication, which is Marshall Rosenthal, you can find that in bookstore, and there's groups in that. But what's cool about that is first you come into this confrontation, but you got to give yourself empathy before you can give the other person empathy. So just to give you an example, so it took me a while to do this, but because my wife started doing nonviolent communication before I did, then I got involved and I had this, you know, yes, no, maybe so attitude. And finally, when I got understood it better, I realized that I could not give her the empathy she was asking for because I was feeling attacked. So I went on the defense as a man, you know, and I would get defensive versus giving myself empathy. What did I say? Oh, I regret what I say. I said to her, I let her talk, let her go through and vent. And then when I did that, when I'm able to process the pain, process her pain, how I might have, and I, it's not like I caused her pain, but I might have been the catalyst that did it, and it brought up what pained her from the past, from her subconscious mind. But rather than go on defensive, first I could process that pain, give myself empathy, and then I could give her empathy. And that way, not only then, that adds to my growth as a human being. I don't know if that makes sense to you. I hope it does, and I hope you can get something out of it. Let's see, I got another bookmarker in here somewhere. Ooh, I even got this one marked. This is good. This is, again, this is the book Emotional Clearing, John Ruskin. It's a pretty deep book. I mean, this is the type of book where I found myself having it by my side, by my chair, at night when I go to relax by the fire. And every so often I'd pull it out and just open it up. And lo and behold, I'd open up to a page just what I'm dealing with. This one is all about beliefs are maintained by suppressed energy. So here he says, beliefs are conditioned states of mind occurring mostly on the unconscious level. What may be a limiting belief is difficult to reprogram directly, even with the use of techniques such as affirmations, because it is held in place by suppressed energy formations. The suppressed energy supports and maintains the belief. In our work, we do not attempt directly to uncover or change unconscious beliefs. I consider such action to be invasive and disevaluating. Instead of accepting ourselves, we accept our beliefs as they are. Processing of feelings will release the energy that is behind the belief and maintains it. The limiting or destructive belief is outgrown naturally instead of in a forced manner, which I find pretty cool because sometimes I could get self-righteous about how quickly we can change our, reprogram our mind. My wife and I were involved with flotation tanks a long time ago, and in order to do it, we got into the John Lilly scene with programming and metaprogramming and reprogramming the mind, and should be able to do it at snap of a finger once you get used to doing it. But this is what I like about John Ruskin. He's talking about why rush it, you know? Let's investigate what that belief is, that old belief, and if you want to change it, fine and dandy, change it. But why don't we investigate the old belief? Why is it there? It might go way back, you know, let's dig a little bit. Oh, yeah, that happened when, you know, my dad or my friend or so-and-so or whoever I was with, you know, this is how they perceived me, and I had this traumatic story about it, you know, and I'm still working through it. And so I recognize it. I dig deep, see it. Now I could eventually grow out of it, change that belief, rather than pretending I'm changing it because I just devalued why that belief is there. You know, now I could look at it, mold it into where I want to be, and become a better person. Take my time with it. I don't know. That's what I get out of that one. John Ruskin, Emotional Clearing. All right, so now we get into this Becoming Supernatural. And this is Dr. Joe Dispenza. I think I've got two of them here. I've got one is Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. How to Lose Your Mind and Create a New One. A little bit of what I was just talking about, what I've learned to do in terms of digging deeper. Because nothing's easy. Come on. All right, so this is Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. Dr. Joe Dispenza, Dispenza. He's gotten pretty clear. If you go on YouTube, and one of these programs, I got to check in with people that do podcasts and YouTubes and make sure I could use some of the material. But I'd like to introduce you to some of these. There's so many people out there in the self-help guru, what I call them, self-help gurus, on YouTube, and you can sit on there and watch all episodes of them talking about it. And he's got YouTubes here, Dr. Joe Dispenza, Dispenza. Side Effects of Closing the Gap. As you know, one of the key skills you need to develop is self-awareness, self-observation. That's a shortcut definition of what I mean when I talk about meditation in the next chapter. So he's using meditation a lot. He's using a lot of different meditation techniques that get you into your brain waves. So right now in the background, I don't know if that's coming through, but if the background, I'm playing binaural beats, and you can get that on YouTube. And it's this one is titled Superintelligence Binaural Beats, and it's for focus music and concentration music. And I'm playing that in the background so I can focus on what I'm talking about here. And hopefully you're able to focus on what I'm saying. And Joe Dispenza is big on this. This is the main work he's doing now. And there's a whole story behind it, how he almost died. And he used the power. He found this power within himself to be able to talk to his cells and regenerate what he needed to do to heal. If I remember right, it was a horrific bicycle accident. I think he was riding a bike, got hit by a car. And it's incredible what he did to make it through that. So part of what he talks about, he's got a little illustration in the book of closing the gap layer by layer. When you unmemorize emotions, you liberate energy. So it's pretty cool. And he's got this graph here. One column is layers of emotion. And it shows unworthiness, anger, fear, shame, self-doubt, guilt. In the next column, it's unmemorizing an emotion. Unmemorize unworthiness and anger. Unmemorize fear. Unmemorize shame. Unmemorize self-doubt. Unmemorize guilt. So as you unmemorize these things, it becomes part of your identity. And you close the gap between how you appear and who you really are. Because you want to get rid of that thought of unworthiness. You want to get rid of this reactionary anger or fear. You know, so you have to go and cut back those layers. And that's, again, the subconscious mind. There's a story back there. You know, God, I fell off a ladder at 16 feet. I fear heights. Dig deep. Okay, so why do I hang on to that? What can I do to unmemorize that emotion? You know, maybe I can jump off of a 5-foot step stool, you know, or a 6-foot ladder and see if I can land safely. Okay, I can handle that. You know, how can we unmemorize that? I'm just using that as an example. And then the last column is liberating energy. Unmemorize fear and shame, self-doubt and guilt. And so now you just liberated yourself and you got this energy. And he uses this energy. It's pretty cool. I mean, here we're talking about him, and we do this woofing program where younger people come over and they help us in the garden on the homestead. And Mandy, a beautiful gal, one day we're all sitting at the lunch table. And we go around and, you know, Hero Universe, I am grateful, give gratitude to whoever our belief system is, or whoever we want to, the land, the native, the God, the creator, everything. So she comes up with this one. Every little cell in my body is happy. Every little cell in my body is well. I'm so glad every little cell in my body is happy and well. It was so cool, man. We sang it about 3 or 4 times, and we all were just laughing. But think about it. You know, here we're talking to ourselves. And this is what Dr. Joe Dispenza did to get him healthy, get himself healthy. And now he's doing it with people that have cancer, all sorts of things. You know, so I just flipped to this in the book here. I just was, as I was singing, it flipped open to this page, and this is beautiful. And this is all about opportunity to write. And it's really cool to write. One of the guys, I haven't read it yet on the radio, and I still have it. He wrote in our men's group. He did a beautiful writing about what it meant to him, I guess, for being in the men's group for all men. All men, uniting and changing, having our opportunity to change this world. And so, anyway, in this book here, Opportunity to Write, in anticipation, write down some things you would like to say in your surrender statement. So I guess in this chapter, he's talking about surrender, surrendering those worries, you know, the emotions that I just read to you in those columns. And so he gives examples of surrender statements. Universal mind within me, I forgive my worries, my anxieties, my small-minded concerns. I give them to you. I trust that you have the mind to resolve them much better than I could. Arrange the players in my world so the doors open for me. In innate intelligence, I release my suffering and my self-pity to you. I have mismanaged my inner thoughts and actions for long enough. I allow you to intervene and provide a greater life in a way that is just right for me. And it's so cool because the way I look at it, I do this meditation. I really like Kundalini, and there's this one gal named Simrit. And you can go on Spotify and get some of her albums. But she's got this one song that just really, really sings to my heart. And it's brought me to tears before. And it's pretty cool because the song is all about, do you know who you are? You think you know who you are? Do you really know who you are? And so it's all about us digging deeper, you know, dig deep into our human self so our soul can find this newfound energy, you know, the energy of the universe. And at the end, so she goes, it's Wahe Guru, and Wahe Guru is like, it's hard to explain how beautiful it is. It opens you up once you've gone through this journey, and you're open to the super intelligence. And then she goes, humble me, Guru, humble me, Guru. And it just resonates. And she, you know, it's beautiful background music, great, great song, mantra. And the humble me, Guru, I look at that and I say, well, the Guru is me. I am the Guru. I am my teacher. Just like you are your teacher if you decide to take this journey into self-awareness and self-discovery. And I love it. In fact, if we got enough time at the end, I might play a little dissertation on that, the ending of it, and maybe it'll be a nice meditation for y'all out there. So let's see if we can fit that in tonight. Got about 12 minutes left on the show. So Dr. Joe's got another book here, Becoming Supernatural, How Common People Are Doing the Uncommon. And I think this is one of his more recent books. And this one is pretty good because it shows you how to free yourself from the past by reconditioning your body to a new mind. And that's what he had to do by talking to his cells and whatnot. How changing your frequency allows you to create reality in the generous present moment. And that's what I find real cool about these binaural sounds and binaural beats. If you do it on YouTube, just go binaural, B-I-N-A-U-R-A-L beats, YouTube it. And it'll come up with a whole bunch. And I used to go to sleep with this at night. It's great because it does all sorts of things. DNA repair. It fits right into when we did this isolation tanks. But it's all about beta, alpha, theta, and delta. Getting you down into those deep brain waves. And out of that, that's all in your pineal gland. Which is that when they do yoga meditation to look at that third eye in between your two eyes, that's where the pineal gland is. There's different techniques you can use to touch behind your front teeth to the roof of your mouth with your tongue. And between that and focusing on that third eye helps open up the pineal gland, and there's different mantras you can do and all that with it. But anyway, that's kind of what... That's what he's talking about here. You know, here it is, right here. The secret science of the pineal gland and its role in accessing mystical realms of reality. And he talks about that in this book. You know, you're shifting awareness beyond the limited, predictable material world and move into the quantum field of infinite possibilities. Ooh, sounds pretty deep. But great for us, guys. If you want to change, and speaking of change, got to get the women involved here. And so I want to start out. This is pretty cool here. This is Marianne Williamson. I think she was one of the Democratic nominee or going for it. I don't know if she's still in the game, but I always liked Marianne Williamson. She's a really good teacher for women, and I love this book. I think guys need to read it. A Woman's Worth. That's the name of the book by Marianne Williamson. Got a beautiful cover, sleeve, just gorgeous. You got to see the cover. I don't want to. It's a woman on the cover. I don't want to let it out. But you got to go look at the book and see if it's still in this sleeve. Random House, Marianne Williamson, author of Return to Love, and it's just beautiful. I just want to read something out of here for you. And this is Women to Women, but it really is good for guys to read this. I read this book in 2 nights. And it talks about, you know, she goes back in time and with daddy, you know, dad back in the 50s and 60s, this is how it was. You know, the women were submissive to men for all these centuries, right? The men were this, the women were that. But there are men in the world who are healthier than daddy was, who think your feelings are beautiful and applaud your passion. The men at the table are not daddy. The ones who are not your men. There are new men appearing now, just as there are new women. And they will not only accept your voice, they will squeeze your hand under the table and silently urge you to continue. But where are they, you ask? You would love to meet a man like that, but you never do. If such a man are not yet in your life, it is because they are not yet magnetized to you. There is nothing in your energy now to suggest to them that they are honored here. The healthiest men are magnetized to the healthiest women. So, it's so beautiful because, you know, one of the things I wanted to put on the show was topics that I like to cover is honoring women. And worthwhile to read that book. But, you know, you want to honor, it's like women these days, the young women, and even my wife, you know, older women and stuff coming out of the 60s, they had voices. And it behooves me how we still, to this day, have figured out how to shut them up or not recognize it or not be there for them, not support them. In fact, I think we talked a little bit about that on that relationship, men and women relationship. And this is where Mary schooled me. I said, well, how can men empower women? And she's, whoa, hold on there, James. You know, that's not happening. So go to check that one out. That's part two. And part two starts out with, we give it away to Mary, and Mary tells us the difference between empowering a woman and support. And what women really need is just to be heard and be loved that for who they are and not who we projected them to be all this life. You know, that they need to support us, need to honor us. It's all about the man. And the woman is there, you know, to do that. Well, not anymore. We got to have a balance. And we are running out of time. And I don't know if we're going to get to that meditation. But I wanted to just cover from there, you know, honoring your women. And I've got a couple books that I really like. Tantric Secrets for Men. So this is all about enhancing sexual ecstasy by Carrie Riley and Diane Riley, a couple. And it's really nice because it's meant for both the couple, but it's really good for men to read, to know how to satisfy a woman's physical, emotional, and spiritual yearnings in a sexual relationship. how to bring himself to new heights of ecstasy in the process. So it's a give and take, and it's really cool. I mean, my wife and I have been really focused in on the tantric love for many years, and we've developed this beautiful relationship with each other, where it's not just a wham bam thank you ma'am, you know, anymore, and it's just like this oneness is so beautiful, because it becomes ritualistic, and you get into these rituals, and you're, next thing you know, you're in an hour or 2 hour session, or it could just go on and on, because you're focused on each other, on giving and receiving. You learn how to give and you learn how to receive, and that's where you get that full sexual ecstasy, and it's not about the big O anymore, you know. It's all about touch, feeling, being there with each other, eye to eye, and it's just a beautiful thing. And there's another book that I really like that goes along with it if you're into massage, and it's a Taoist foreplay. So it's all about love meridians, it's all pressure points, it's all acupressure, and it's beautiful. It goes into it's just a great book. It gives you all the meridians that open up these channels and enhances our love making, and what both men and women need. And that is called Taoist Foreplay by Mantak Chia, like chia seeds, C-H-I-A, and Chris Diva North. Taoist Foreplay. Look that up in your bookstore. And I'm going to save this other book for another show. I got more books. There's one here I wanted to get into. Byron Katie, Marshall Rosenthal. There's one I got here, Create True Prosperity, which isn't about money. And that's by Shakti Galwan. It's a woman. And there's another one that I thought was pretty cool called the Mind Map Book. I use it a lot. Mind mapping, if anybody's ever done mind mapping, it's pretty creative and beautiful. And the Mind Map Book is by Tony Buzan, B-U-Z-A-N. And quickly here, I just did I done a chart for myself last year, actually, and I did three columns: reality of illusion, observation, reality of wisdom. And in reality of illusion, it's forced action, ego fulfillment, joy or disappointment, survival, fearful living, the inferior mind. And so that's what we were talking about with the conscious language and consciousness and my subconsciousness. This is where my subconsciousness lies: misconception, lack, and anxiety. And so I observe that as I'm working on myself. Oh, I observe of who I am. I am being present. I am loving what is. I am mindfulness. I am limitless living. And I am the infinite mind. Joe Dispenza, that's where I got that one from. And then the third column, reality of wisdom. So we live in illusion and reality. And the reality is the universal law, what's around us, that universal law, the energy force fields, the binarial force fields that we're made of, that's in this planet. We're just molecules, right? Personal fulfillment on the inner. Contentment. I have nothing to complain about because I love life. Conscious awareness, being very conscious of who I am, what I say, how I say it. Trustful living, and the superior mind. That's all about truth, trust, and abundance. And with that, my friends, we're there. We're at the end of the show. That was a full hour. So God bless you all. May you have a great new year. And I'll see you on the rebound. May you be blessed.